It's that time of the week, we get the view from the north. You can find all he's up to for Comcast Sportsnet online, csnnw.com. Catch him on the tube talking ball, Comcast Channel 737 down here on Xfinity. Become a follower on Twitter, and he draws some doozies. The handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Mr. Fentress, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing all right, man. I'm doing all right. How are you?
Good. Let's get to what really matters, the progress of your golf game. So let's lay it on the line here. You started playing a little bit more right after, I'd say, around the final four. Here we are now, July 13th. How much forward progress have we made?
I made a lot of forward progress till I left for 10 days. When I left for some vacation to go to my niece's wedding and then to Florida to do the Tiger stuff, I came back and I regressed big time. Not quite back to my horrid play of last summer, but I regressed and I'm struggling and I'm very, very frustrated. I went out today and it was a train wreck.
Well, it's the one thing that, as somebody who's played since they're 13, and so I went to, you know me, I'm 5'8", I weigh 87 pounds, I didn't play football. So after high school and college.
87 pounds, you're soaking wet with a barbell on your neck.
Nice. It was always amusing once we got into our 20s to, go out with my buddies who were jocks and football players and basketball players. Uh-huh. And then be like, yeah, golf. And all of a sudden them be inventing new curse words as they got out there and were taking 11s and 12s on par fours.
It's just so true, man. So I teed off on a hole. And we let some people play through because we were playing a little slower because I was in the trees the whole time. And some guy went up there, 87 years old, and just drilled it right down the fairway. And I'm like, I quit. I'm done. And then yesterday, I went to my kids are playing golf. They had a match out at Walton. And this little girl, dude, she couldn't have been more than like 3 feet tall. She was really tiny for her age, but she was like 8 or 9. Just drilled a shot down the middle. I'm like, that girl would beat me. I may retire by the end of the summer.
No, it's a unique game, to say the least. But let's get to insanity. The past few days, we've seen the press conferences to promote this Mayweather-McGregor fight or whatever it is they're going to do in August. But so we know one thing. De La Hoya, Madonna, Sugar Shane, Marquez. No one has gotten a clean shot at Mayweather. Now we're going to have a UFC dude debuting in the ring. What has been your take on all this?
Oh, it's a giant joke, but I'm going to watch. I mean, here's the thing. There's no conceivable way to believe that Conor McGregor is going to have a chance to win this fight. I mean, there's just no way. You're talking about the greatest defensive boxer ever, if not, top three, going against a guy who does not box. Now, can he box compared to the average human? Yeah, but he's a fighter. How many minutes in his professional career has he actually spent boxing where he wasn't trying to get someone down or kick someone? Like maybe all of about 3.5 minutes, if that.
Right. It's been a lot of one-rounders.
Yeah, so he... And well, not even that. Just even fights that went 3 or 4 rounds. How much of that time is he actually boxing?
No,
he doesn't box.
Yeah. That's a good point.
He's trying to do everything else. That's what I'm saying. So you're going up against one of the greatest fighters of all time who does not get hit by professional boxers who all they do is box for a living. There's no way. There's just no way. Now that doesn't matter for the person who might watch it. Because if you hate Floyd Mayweather, you've just been dying to see him get knocked out. So you're going to watch. If you're a UFC fan, you want to hope like hell your guy's going to win to maybe validate UFC even more. Imagine the validation for UFC if Conor McGregor goes out there and beats one of the greatest fighters of all time.
Oh, my God.
And if you're a boxing fan, you want to shut up all these UFC fans who think UFC is better. You want to see Mayweather crucify this guy. So there's all sorts of reasons to show up and watch. None of them have anything to do with an actual competitive fight. It's more just what angle you want to take. So I'll give you one last analogy. If the New England Patriots tomorrow were going to play Alabama in a football game, we all know the Patriots would slaughter them, but we all would watch.
No, that's interesting. Let me tell you what we came up with, and I want to hear your reaction. It's Eyes Wide Open. So I'm going to host the fight. I'm going to have a shirt made that says Sucker. Everybody else gets a shirt that says I'm with Sucker. So we know what we're doing going in. How's that work?
Hey, you know what? You're paying for theater. That's what this is. And the press conference only beefed that up. They're talking trash. Conor McGregor's saying some crazy stuff. He has a crazy suit. It's all about building it up. And come on. Everyone remembers in grade school when you heard, there's a fight. You ran right over there to see who was fighting, no matter what. Well, I remember the time when it was a scheduled fight. I remember elementary school sometimes. It was like third recess or second recess. I think it's going to be third recess at about 1:17 over where. It's going to be basketball court or the football field. I think it's going to be a football field. Okay, I'll see you there. I mean, it was like appointment fight back in my elementary school. So, you know, people are going to watch it.
No, there's no doubt about it. Talking with Aaron Fentress of Comcast Sportsnet. And I get, especially around here, you got three Duck players kind of who got drafted, some in our orbit paying attention to the NBA Summer League, which I've referred to as actually kind of a scrub league, because for every Lonzo Ball, there are like nine Luke Cornets who will never see an NBA court. So is it just a slow sports time of year? Are you following this? What do you make of all this?
Well, I think it's the value in it is watching the young guys your team has drafted. And I admit, every summer I'll watch one or two games to see whatever young Bulls there are.
Right.
You know, like you know, the Bulls obviously have a lot of young players this year, so I tune in and watch, you know, a couple times already. It's, you know, it's just kind of nice to see them play a little bit. But you take it with a grain of salt. I remember a couple of years, or last year, I think, Doug McDermott was MVP and the Bulls won it. And then Doug McDermott was horrible during the season and got traded. So, and then I'm talking ball the other day. We were talking about the Blazers. And we were talking about Connaughton and Lehman and their performances. They were shooting poorly. And the whole time, you know, we were being positive about Swanigan and Collins? Why do you say Collins? Is that name? Out of Gonzaga? Anyway.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, I'm going to keep it real, though. These guys are shooting poorly. I'm like, you know, these are guys have been on NBA rosters. I would rather see them, you know, perform, because the discussion was, are they showing anything that makes you think they're going to play a lot next year? And so Dwight James and Jordan Kent, like, launched into how, oh, it doesn't matter. It's just summer league, and there's no structure, and sometimes that hurts the veteran guys. And I'm like, so what? These guys played in the NBA. They should go out of summer league and light up these guys who are never going to, you know, play in the NBA ever. And they push back on me again. So I'm thinking to myself, well, why are we talking about this? If we're going to accept 22% shooting and that doesn't matter, then why are we even talking about summer league? So that's how needless or senseless it is to really put too much stock into it, but it does have value for the young rookies who just got drafted.
Yeah, let's not delve into the analytics of the summer league, please.
Exactly.
So you've been counting down to Duck football, looking ahead to guys who need to, I guess, upgrade their contribution in order to turn this around. And you wrote about Gary Baker, who I kind of forgot about. He's a big interior defensive lineman who redshirted, only played about half the games last season. So what do they need from him, and where do you see him fitting in?
Well, clearly they have to firm up the middle. And, you know, you go to the 3-4s, you got two inside linebackers, but that nose tackle has to be able to stand his ground and do some damage. And everyone's excited about Jordan Scott, the flamboyant, young, entertaining freshman who I wish we could talk to, but he can't talk to freshmen, but he seems like he's going to be a fun guy. His Twitter is a hoot. I don't know if he tweeted the other day him doing a backflip dive or a forward.
I saw that.
Dive. Yeah, it was hilarious. And I tweeted back at him some judges holding up 10. And, he liked it, which shows he has a good sense of humor. But, you know, he's going to be a true freshman, and he's still working his way into shape. He came in out of shape. He's lost a lot of weight. But I can imagine he's going to be ready to deal with, you know, playing 40 or 50 snaps in the Pac-12 level. That's just not going to happen. And even Jim Levitt said that when I talked to him about that, and Taggart said that too. So you look, okay, Rex Manu. Now, I'm hearing through the grapevine, I'm trying to nail this down, that Rex could be injured and not available for much of the season.
Oof.
Yeah, so this is sort of like, I heard it from some good sources, but I haven't printed it yet, so it's sort of a little questionable, but I'm just going to say it because I'm not reporting it, I'm just saying I've heard.
I gotcha.
So if that's the truth, even if Rex is available, you still need someone else in that middle who can get it done for you. And Gary Baker's a guy who started four games last year. He had a career-high 5 tackles against USC. He's a big guy. He's someone the program's been developing, and you've got to hope that he's able to step in there, and at the very least, he and Jordan could split time there, and then maybe Pagano goes to the middle on passing situations, which is what he did at Clemson. So I think Gary Baker's going to be very key to this defense.
All right, same unit. The 4-3 lasted a year, back to a 3-4. And obviously the best of the front seven last year, Troy Dye now goes to inside linebacker. And
right.
Last year, Lamar Winston came here from your neck of the woods, Central Catholic. He's actually just recruited as an athlete. I think one site, though, had him as a top 20 linebacker nationally, mostly a special teamer. So what are they looking for from this young guy? And again, where?
Yeah, I mean, so you got to figure that Swain and Hoskins are going to start. They started most of last year. You figure they're going to be in the mix somewhere. Maybe Swain moves outside since Dye's moving inside. And then, so you're looking for a fourth linebacker. Obviously, I think Winston's going to be in the mix for that. But even more so than that, it's, you know, Hoskins and Swain are seniors. So you go into the next year, you know, you got to have some young guys in the pipeline who have been getting reps and playing to step in seamlessly the next year. So, to me, someone like Winston, who was a four-star recruit, he was actually, Rivals had him as, I think, number 8 or 9 athlete in the nation. He was listed as athlete on Rivals because he played multiple positions. But this is a guy, you know, holdover from the last regime that was billed as a pretty big level recruit that they were getting. Now, obviously, they're getting him in-state, so you should be able to get that guy. But still, regardless, he's supposed to be a legit big-time guy. I think Oregon needs someone like this who's that athletic to be a playmaker, to rise up from a guy who played mostly special teams last year, but to at least be in, you know, a frequent visitor to the rotation, if not a starter, to not only help the depth this season, help the athleticism for the season, but set them up for next year.
All right. A couple final thoughts for Aaron Fencher's Comcast Sports Net. You were in Tampa for this huge piece you've got coming up on Coach Tags. I see you got some excerpts on the site called Do Something, which is his get ready tagline, if you will. But he has come out with a specific don't do something. So he's decided that certain spots in town, off limits to his guys.
I didn't see this.
I thought it was your interview.
No.
I saw it on the site, and we were getting driven.
On our site?
Yeah.
It might have been. Was it a radio replay?
It might have been. It was. If you go to the site, click Ducks, scroll down. There's 4 pictures of Coach Tags with like 2-minute interviews. I thought they were excerpts from what you had put together. Oh.
I'm gonna go check it out because I didn't even notice that. My bad.
No, actually, maybe it was my bad because I clicked on it. I couldn't hear what he was saying. I was like, "Ah, screw it. I'll just ask Fetchers." All right, let's
All right, well, let's talk Cubs trade.
There you go. Yeah. By the way, the starting has been bad. Arrieta, at this point, you got to look at him as kind of a 1.5-year wonder. Their best starter right now is Eddie Butler. So they traded some young talent. Actually, a couple of guys we saw play here in Eugene. So they bring in Jose Quintana from the south side. So Theo have to make a move. You thinking they needed to do something like this to make a run in, you know, thankfully a pretty mediocre Central?
Yeah, they've been talking about getting him it's been talked about for a few months because, Lester's getting up there. Arrieta's going to be a free agent. I don't know what's going to happen with him. He's not pitching well, so maybe you don't have to give him a huge contract. But definitely we're going to give him like $100 million. So to get a guy like Quintana, who is only 28, you have 3 years of control left after this season on him. His contract, I think, is the most it goes up to is $10 million a year. I think it was a no-brainer because it sets you up. It only fills your knee rotation this year, but it sets you up for the next few years. And then you can go out and get someone else to replace Arrieta. And they gave up minor league guys. And at this point with the Cubs, they're so young at the major league level, you don't need that much minor league talent yet. This may catch up to them down the road when you start looking at all these minor league studs become all-stars elsewhere. But that's the price of doing business, right? I mean, that's what you do. You give up prospects to get proven guys to fill in holes, and they're so young at the major league level. But the bottom line is that the starting rotation this year, like ERA is like 4.7. Last year it was 2.9. You know, I don't know if this one guy's going to fix that, especially with his ERA this year. He's having the worst year of his career. He's 4-8 with a 4.5 ERA. You know, so that's a little problematic. But I think it was a good move. You know, we'll see how it works out. But mostly, man, Kyle Schwarber has to hit. Addison Russell has to start hitting. Baez has to start hitting. Gosh, Sobers is hitting 230, man. And then Jason Hayward's making $20 million a year. He's hitting 250, which is an improvement over last year.
Right.
20. So there's all sorts of things going around with the Cubs. I'm a little concerned.
All righty. It is July 13th, and like I said, the Brewers aren't exactly the 98 Yankees, so there is a chance. All right. Hey, great stuff as always on Twitter at Aaron J. Fentress. Check out the site, csnnw.com. AF, always a pleasure, my friend. Have a good one.
All right. Take care.
Take it easy.